Is this embarrassing? Yes. Is it awkward? Yes.
No, bitch, it wasn't awkward until you made it awkward by saying awkward.
Ladies and gentlemen,
awkward.
We social podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Awkwardly Social Podcast. My name is Jose Chavez. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. I'm going to be joined in a few minutes by a friend of mine, George Wang, a comedian. I'm a big fan of. I respect him tremendously, not just in his comedy, but the hustle he has. Because you know when you see people online who really make an effort to talk about all the things that they're doing in their grind and whatnot, things that I don't normally say myself, because when I say it, it sounds the way I just said it. Not great. But he's a person who I greatly respect for the amount of work that he's putting out there. And that's actually one of the reasons why I wanted to have him on today's episode. Because in COVID, there are so many things going on. And at the same time, there's so much that can't happen. A lot of people's ways of employment, live entertainment. I mean, I haven't performed in a show since late February. I didn't do any shows in March. Right before COVID, everything shut down and everyone started taking it real serious. There was no point. There was no point in chancing it. There was no show that would encourage me to go out. I did go hang out once, but it was just more of a hangout kind of situation, to which I'm thankful that nothing ended up happening, because the week before the show that I did, the producer of the show ended up actually catching COVID. So that was a huge gamble, and I shouldn't have chanced it by going anywhere else. But you know, you learn. We were new to this. We didn't know it was going to be what it is today. But one of the things about it is we can't perform. So a lot of comedians that are relying on stand-up for a majority, or even if they're not relying on that, you know, a job as a server, certain jobs, it's unfortunate that it's being impacted the way that it is. But honestly, it needs to be. Not that we want the impact to be there, but if we don't deal with it now in the way that we're dealing with it, it's only going to get much worse down the line. And it's at one point it becomes selfish. Like, am I willing to risk my employment and getting a job and getting paid, and then at the same time increasing the chance of somebody else getting severely sick? It's a weird sort of it's a reality that we have right now. We don't know when what we do is going to impact somebody else, but we know. Sometimes we really, truly know. I've told this story about this guy who gets on the subway, who pukes, and he ends up getting me really sick to the point where I had to be hospitalized. I almost died because this guy needed to catch the subway. It didn't look like he was going to work. It looked like he was going to hang out somewhere and was in complete denial about his current health situation. I mean, he ended up getting off of the subway in a panic. I still worry and think about the woman who was pregnant at the time. Hopefully her and her kid are okay. But that specific moment, way before COVID, really taught me that your selfishness can end up impacting somebody else. And getting back to it, it's unfortunate because we have to make these sacrifices, these compromises. I can't speak from my ivory tower. I don't have an ivory tower, but, you know, I'm in not a terrible place right now. So I know that I can speak this way right now because I am not in the same position you're in. And I apologize for that. But at the same time, you know, some of the people I'm seeing going out, it's not because they are worried about their employment. It's because they're worried about that they're not partying enough. I mean, I've seen those arguments out there. And I've also been reading up on a lot of things that this is apparently a psychological thing that people do as a part of dealing with trauma, denial. I'm going to butcher this because I'm not reading the article right now. But essentially, it's a short term. It allows you to cope just fine because it's kind of helping you get over that hump, the trying to process the fear of something, the doubt, the concerns that you have. And then the other side of it is if it goes on for too long, eventually you have to build this whole facade or this whole lie, and you have to convince yourself of these things. And it's not necessarily that you're being morally compromised, but you just don't know that you are putting yourself or others in that position because you are convincing yourself that everything is okay. I mean, one of the arguments was if somebody says that COVID's just the flu, then what they're doing is they're willing to admit that it is in fact a disease that's out there that's impacting people, but they try to minimize it because they don't want to. That's their way of being able to justify you know, wanting to go out and have drinks at the beach with their friends or whatever people do these days, because I don't know. I hope you're doing well. I hope you had a great weekend leading up to now. I'm recording on a Monday. I'm going to try to do this thing where I do solo Sundays where it's me by myself on a Sunday posting just a Sunday episode of me. Then on Monday, I'm going to have a guest on. And then Thursdays, I'm going to interchange between back and forth between having a guest or just showcasing something that someone's going to be doing, like what George is going to be coming on in a moment to talk about. Because he has been doing some great stuff, and he's actually he teaches people how to skate, and this is actually giving him some great attention right now and success that he's going to be able to use to, you know, forgive the pun, but skate by, you know, get by until the world gets to where it needs to be. And this is going to be a whole new normal for him. But I wanted to focus on Thursday episodes where I showcase the sides of, you know, small businesses, things that people are doing, projects that people have going on. I mean, I'm working on something right now, and it's kind of exciting. And it's not something you'll ever see unless somebody says, you know what, we want to make this project happen, because I'm not going the YouTube route with the project I'm trying to pitch. So fingers crossed, let's see how that goes. But what I was going to get at is this past weekend, I understood, because I took time to hop into the car, you know, driving around, not even running errands, just literally driving around, driving by old stomping grounds, just kind of driving around the San Fernando Valley and seeing places that I hadn't seen in so long, just to kind of feel normal, just to kind of feel like, okay, it's nice to kind of go out. It was a weird cruising thing. And it was kind of comforting being in that situation, because, you know, we haven't done anything. It's been a very boring sort of COVID quarantine. No bi-weekly Disney trips, nothing like that. So a regular drive like that both made me feel like, oh, this is comfortable. And at the same time reminded me how much I fucking hate traffic. I had to deal with two people driving so slow, taking the two lanes, that I was switching lanes back and forth trying to find my opportunity to go around them. At some point, I felt like I was being pranked by them with how slow they were going. One of them ended up making a right turn, and then when I was passing the other one, I saw it was an older person. So I'm glad that I didn't do what I wanted to do, which I wouldn't have done anyway. But, you know, be vocal about the fact that they are hogging the road that they're doing. If you're out on the road, it doesn't matter if there's nobody in front of you. It doesn't matter if you're not in a rush. If you're taking it easy, right lane's a slow lane, left lane, faster lane. It's that simple. If you're going that slow, then maybe get out of people's ways. I'm just saying, be a little more courteous. And then Sunday, tried to do the exact same thing with what I used to do before quarantine, which was driving to the beach right before sundown when people are starting to leave. It wasn't like a COVID thing that I would do. It was literally just, I don't want to be around a lot of people. I don't want to be in the hot ass sun, but I want to get the nice cool breeze flowing through my hair, getting that salt in the sky to, you know, coat my skin and my hair, so when I shower, it feels nice and clean and good. The plan was to do the same. Show up just before sundown. The place should be fairly empty by then. It didn't occur to me that people are so desperate to get to go out to do things, they're not going to head home once the sun goes down. The place was packed. It's like I went through rush hour to try to go there. I couldn't find a single place to pull over to, you know, clear my head to step out. It wasn't even about stepping out. It was about like pulling over, maybe cracking the windows a little bit. And I couldn't even do that much. But it's okay, because we do what we got to do to get by. And I made my peace with it, that was it. I should have planned it out better. And I also should have known that there aren't a lot of people that are going to be sitting around doing nothing. If they get a chance to go to the beach, they're going to go to the beach. And did that totally fine. Moved on, drove to Target as usual, got stuff that needed for the week for food, started doing smoothies more, you know, replacing certain meals, which I started doing wrong the first time. I was doing a really healthy smoothie, both combining veggie and fruit smoothie together, and then putting in some whey, you know, something protein-ish. The plan was, okay, this will substitute a meal, and then I'll do a workout afterwards. Not only did I not do the workout, but I ended up eating a meal on top of that. It's like, okay, cool. And I had this smoothie. You know what I'm in the mood for? Ramen. And I legitimately did that. And it felt, I was so mad at myself twice today. I accidentally took a photo of myself when I was petting my cat. And the photo got a nice shot of her, but it got a whole face of me in like the worst possible angle. And I was like, oh, goodness, I need to be like, okay, being forgiving on myself and not rushing myself to get into shape during quarantine is fine, but I'm starting to go too much in the other direction. So I'm just going to have to make my peace with that and move on at this point, apparently, because that's just how things are going right now. So if you see me being a little obnoxious about my eating habits, or if you see me posting something a little bit cranky, know that it's coming from a place of, I don't know, I was in a bad mood because I was hangry. If you're joining me right now and you're wondering where the guest is, I'm wondering the same thing. He was supposed to join me via Zoom, and he let me know he was running about 10 minutes late. So I used this opportunity to record an introduction. And it looks like he's going to be joining me soon, hopefully. If not, then you know what? I'll make this into a solo episode. It happens. It's cool. I actually had to reschedule a few different guests. And then when I finally rescheduled them all, I didn't realize I'd put them all on the same day. So I actually ended up having to reschedule on him at some point. So we keep playing back and forth this way. But thankfully, we're going to be back on track real soon. I did want to take this moment before he comes on to talk about this. You know what? I will leave names out of it. Not because there's anybody that I'm trash talking. Not at all. It's more about being respectful of somebody who's passed, somebody who's no longer with us, somebody who I used to not be a fan of. And I will be the first to admit that a couple months ago, I came to the realization that I was being, how could I put it? Not necessarily a dick, but I wasn't giving him a chance. And you know when you put a mirror in front of you and somebody has the same qualities as you do, you don't like them? Why parents and children dispute, they get into arguments because they're too similar and they can't see that, because you always see qualities in someone else that you don't like about yourself, and you see it in someone else, and then it makes you not like that person. Not because they're terrible in any way, but because it's a part of yourself that you just cannot address. This guy was like that for me. And he was a little too ambitious, which I will admit I am fully guilty of being ambitious and how could I put it? Wanting to be a part of the group, you know, and it comes from the fact that I wasn't for a very long time. And now that I am, I thrive in it. At least I try to. And he came around. I didn't give him much of a chance. He did a couple of things that he had no control over. He didn't know that I didn't want a third wheel in these conversations. Because, again, it's not his fault that I have difficulty talking to more than one person at a time. Unless it's prepared. I do this thing where you can blame it on my Asperger's. I have to study the conversation between people and build a rapport with somebody in order to be able to be comfortable with them well enough to carry on in conversations. Then you throw a wrench in the whole fucking machine, which is another person who is just as eager to engage in a conversation. And suddenly I'm thrown off. And then I just felt awful that I didn't give him a chance. And unfortunately, he passed away very recently, very suddenly, and it wasn't anything that, I mean, he and I weren't friendly. We were friendly, but we weren't friends. And it upset me, because the more I read up on him, the more I was like, God damn it, he seemed like a great guy. He seemed like a really good man, and I was being a dick. I felt awful. I felt terrible for doing that. I should have given him the chance that I didn't give him, and now it's too late. And honestly, I would say that I feel not awful, and like things could have been so different for him, for us, whatever. More about the fact that, you know, it was one moment in time where I could have just been a little bit nicer, and I chose not to be, because I didn't realize at the time anyway that I wasn't being the nicest person. And you know, so I'll say this much. If you feel like there's somebody that you're not giving a chance to, first impressions are terrible. I'm terrible. I'm awful at first impressions. If this is your first time hearing me ever, you're going to think to yourself, who the fuck is this guy? He's annoying me. And then, this might be who you stick with, and this is who you hear and see whenever you see me because of this one moment. If I didn't ask more of other people to give me, another opportunity to provide a better impression of myself and to be a little more comfortable, I wouldn't have half the friends that I have today. And that's not many friends to be with. So, very few people were being as generous with me as I would like to be with others and want from myself. So, rest in peace, sir. I really hope, truly hope that your family's taken care of. I will say that you left a good impression on several people, and including myself, and I took that kindness, not necessarily for granted, because I was so unaware of the fact that my issues were my own, and it had nothing to do with you. So rest in peace to you, sir. Be well in paradise. I don't have much more to say on that, but it was a real, it was a real moment that really got to me. And especially when anybody, it doesn't matter how much you do or like or don't like somebody, a passing is always going to be kind of hard on you for a moment. Even if it's not anything more than that moment, you're still going to go through the thoughts. There's stages of grief and mourning when it's somebody who you truly value and is a integral part of who you are in your life. Those really, knock me on my ass. But these smaller ones, they don't so much. It's like there's a smaller version of grief. And I think it's more of for me, it's like the best I can do is in his memory and, pay homage to him by being kinder towards others, especially if they remind me of myself or they remind me of him. I will try to apply those things as they seem like this kind of guy. And he ended up being a nice guy, and I should give this person a chance because I was a fool for not giving this other person a chance. The same thing that I ask from you, I ask of you to ask from yourself and others. Just be a little nicer. And, it's always this is always like a time of the year where things like this are always so, I tend to be very reflective of these times, not COVID per se, but, losing people and kind of losing yourself, because it was last week, about a week ago today, almost even, was the anniversary of Robin Williams' death. He died. He took his own life 6 years ago. He was having some health problems and things, and he didn't know how to really cope with it. Obviously, he dealt with a lot of depression, but he couldn't handle where his mind and his body were going to go, and so he committed suicide. He killed himself, and it's sad and it's fucking awful. But in that moment, I wrote this thing on Facebook. I'm going to try to read it to you. Hopefully, it's a little serious. If you're listening to this and you're wondering why is Jose sharing this on George Wang's episode, it's because I have a little bit of time to kill and it's important. And I have Asperger's, I have depression, I have social anxiety, real fucking difficult time being in large groups. I can be on stage where there's so many people in the audience, a packed house that could be in the dozens, hundreds, thousands, and I feel like I had thousands. Like I've had, that's happened twice, Jose. Don't make it seem like you're the hot shit. But I get real bad in certain situations, and my depression was really bad. And I wrote this thing, and please bear with me, and I promise you we're going to get straight to George from there, because he just sent me a message that he'll be on in a few minutes. So I'm going to go ahead and put this in there. Robin Williams saved my life. 6 years ago today, I almost took my own life. I had written the note, had my exit plan, and was ready to be done with the depression. I was unable to call anyone because there was nothing they could say, and didn't want to leave any guilt on them for, quote, not saying the right thing, end quote. I was selfish to leave behind a woman that loved me and my family, my mom, sisters, nieces, nephews, as well as some good friends that I felt would miss me, but my brain wouldn't let me feel like that was enough. I hopped on social media, to deactivate my accounts. And the plan was to do so without any announcement and go quietly. And then I saw the news about Robin Williams' death. I loved him as Genie in Aladdin, as well as other iconic roles. His characters matured and grew as I did, and it was just part of the seasoning to my sense of humor. He took his own life because, well, it was what he knew in the moment. That numbness was where I was prior to reading about him. It knocked me on my ass, and in that vulnerable state, all I could think was his poor family. I couldn't even do that for my own because a part of me just dismissed my own value. When he died, a part of me snapped back and I realized I couldn't do the same. This is what pushed me back and off of that ledge. And while his actions were heartbreaking for his family and his fans, it was what I needed to not only find my way back to therapy and medication, but to finally confronting my demons and learning forgiveness. Thank you for the one last moment of inspiration, Mr. Williams. It's easy to hope now and know that if I check in with you, know that I'm truly checking in. And at this point, I'm talking to the audience, to my friends, to whomever that needs this. Thank you again for saving my life, Mr. Williams. That was a lot. You know what? I'm thankful for the fact that I have people in my life that are still around me and that I'm still here for them. And hopefully talk to someone else, even if it doesn't seem like it's easy to do. Give me one. I'll be on a quick break and I'll be right back. For sure. And we are back. I'm back with George Wang, who just joined me after doing a bunch of skating like you're one to do. Thanks so much for doing this, and no worries about it, man. I it gave me some time to record a quick introduction, and I poured my heart out just before you hopped out. So thank you.
I'm glad I gave you the time to do that.
Thank you. Yeah, I had a good cry. I was very emotional. I changed my own life.
Yeah, man. So you look good. How you been? You're been. I haven't seen you since COVID hit, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a minute. I'm doing good. Thank you very much. If I look good, it's because this ring light is hitting me perfectly.
Right.
Aside from that, no, I've
you have one of those ring lights?
I do.
The little circle thing?
Yeah, it actually works really well. It gives you decent lighting.
And, it does.
Yeah.
It's great.
So, yeah. No, but aside from that, I put on like 15 pounds in COVID, so I am definitely not looking the most svelte at the moment. Which isn't terrible.
This isn't really the ideal time to like get ripped.
No.
So who are you getting ripped for? You know, you're not going out. You're fucking home all day.
Oh.
I mean, you're not going to hang out anywhere. So well, you might as well put on some pounds.
Here's the thing. You don't know this about me. I'm an influencer and I'm a fitness influencer. So I'm also on OnlyFans. So, you know, I have my large audience and I just got too large for them. No, none of that's true.
I was like, is he joking or is he really part of some fitness thing?
No, definitely not. I haven't been. I had gym class in high school. I paid for a 24-hour fitness membership that went to waste most of the time. So I'm definitely not a fitness person. I have two weights that I got during COVID, and they're collecting dust right now. So I'm not the guy you go to for fitness.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we do go to you for podcasts and good conversation.
You go to me for those awkward pauses and the regrets of hopping on a podcast. That is true.
And ring light on your face.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is great. Let's take a look here. You could change it. You could change a look at mood lighting.
Uh-huh. There we go.
Yes.
Would be great for like a TikTok dance.
Exactly. So a lot of people have been asking me about my makeup tutorials, and I'm going to give you all of my secrets.
Please enlighten me.
All right. So
how do I get double eyelids?
So here's what you do. you put on a little bit of weight. You put on just enough weight because the fat fills in the wrinkles, and it makes you look a lot smoother. And then by eating poorly, it builds these extra oils on your skin, and that extra oil locks in the youth. And that is how you stay young and vital and as handsome as I do. I'm 49 and I look great.
Well, are you really 49?
No, I'm 36. But No, I know. Not that I wish I was 49, but I'm ready to be in my 40s just so I can really be like done with.
Isn't
youth.
It weird how your entire opinion will change when someone's like, I'm 40 something? Like when you're 30, you still are, oh, that's cool. And yeah. then when they're like, I'm 40 or I'm 51, and you're like, whoa, fuck. And then you're like, damn, I'm not too far from that at all. Like, we're 10 years away from being 50, me and you, if you're 36.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I'm cool with that. I inherited my mom's state of mind where my mom has this thing like, once I'm 50 and I'm 60, whatever, I'm done with life. Like, she's just like, cool, whatever. Just done.
She's
essentially
still
retired.
Is she still around?
She's still around. But okay, she was like, I don't. She both as a younger person was like, I don't want to get old, but when I do, I'm just gonna be like, whatever. I don't give a fuck. Me, I was like, I can't wait to be out of my 20s. Once I got into my 30s, I was like, I can't wait to be in my 40s. I'm sure when I hit a certain age, I'm gonna wish it was the other way around. But God, I was never good at being young. That's why I legitimately. At 23, I was convinced that I was like, you know, a fucking like a year away from, you know, being retired, being old and getting my AARP.
What's an AARP?
Like, you know, your retirement plan.
Oh, OK. I didn't even know what that meant, but okay. That's what it's called.
Yes. Dude, you got to look.
It almost sounds like the NAACP. AARP.
Yeah, I mean that
like an Asians activist civil rights group. Like, I'm from the AARP.
Do it. I want you to start the Asian American civil rights group.
There's already tons of that on Facebook fucking groups. There's like a new hate crime every day. You know what's funny? There's so many hate crimes during this COVID thing. And I'm in Monterey Park where that can't happen because we're all Chinese here.
Uh-huh.
So I just feel bad to be that Asian guy in some like racist ass state. And you're just blamed for the coronavirus because a lot of, I guess I don't see it, but everyone's always bitching about like some guy getting fucking beat up, some dude, you know, some guy getting slapped with hand sanitizer, some grandma getting kicked into a fucking subway, you know, like. And it's just like, it's so sad. I'm like, God, that's so fucked up. I'm so glad to be in an area where everyone's Chinese. So we'll just gang up on you if you try to pull that here, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's nice to know that you live around a gang. That I mean, that you are creating a gang amongst your community.
We started Asian gangs where I live. We're the reason why they exist.
That's funny.
Yeah.
What are you guys like skating Asian gangs? Is that the whole thing?
No. In the 90s, like Asian Boys. All right, the first Asian gang never be put on the map. There was a shooting at a pool hall called IC, and this guy came in guns blazing, and I guess he was killing. He killed this drug dealer that owed him money, but it was like the most gangster clip because he comes and he starts shooting. Guy goes under the table and he starts shooting under the table. And that was kind of like the forefront of the Asian gang era, which was like early 90s. And like in my area, it was just like so many different Asian gangs were out there just trying to like, you know, I don't know. I grew up around a lot of Asian gangsters who were insanely violent. Like it was almost like you were watching like a Van Damme movie. Like they would go like throw the bar around or, you know, go to a pool hall and start beating a guy with pool sticks. Like it was crazy, Jose. Like I can't believe how much shit has changed. And I couldn't believe like Asian people were doing this because I'm not from LA. I come from Colorado where it was like Pleasantville, you know, where it was like everyone was white. There was really no other ethnicity. Like we were pretty much the only Chinese family in our neighborhood. So when I moved here from Colorado, it was a culture shock. It was like the aliens in Toy Story when they see the other aliens so when I came here and I just saw that like there was just so many other Asians and there was Asian gangs and it was a trip.
Now, did you move out here on your own, like when you were older, or did you come over with your family?
No, I came here like Oregon Trail with the family. My dad, you know, he had had owned a bunch of restaurants that had gotten closed down, and he just decided he wanted to come out here. And I'm so happy he did, because I wouldn't be on this podcast if we never moved.
Isn't that funny how things work out?
Because of him. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I always think about that. Like the not just a chain of events with your own family, but his family before him all leads up to you now, you know.
Here at this moment now.
Exactly.
And you have to think about, like, you know, we never think about the moves our parents made to put us in the position we are here now. Because we're not, you're Latino, I'm Asian. Most likely our parents probably came from somewhere else, like our generation. I don't know if your parents are second generation, but my parents migrated here from another country.
Yeah.
And came here with like no money, no English, you know, having to like build something from scratch. And I couldn't do that. Like I couldn't do what my parents did. Like if I wanted to go to China right now and like, I'm going to make it, that would not happen. I wouldn't have getting like conned or like, you know, I don't know how to speak the language. So it would just be sad and pathetic.
It wouldn't be sad. It'd be a culture shock. I mean, if you think about it, that's exactly what your parents went through. They went through the exact same lessons. So you would just be following in their footsteps. Although I bet they'd probably be a little annoyed that they came to this country and then you just bounce right back. They'd be like, what did we do this for?
Yeah, there's no reason.
Yeah. No. So yeah. My family is, I am first generation. My family came from Mexico and El Salvador. And so we are, I mean, I could throw it out there. We've always been here, you know, but it's,
were your parents migrated here from Mexico or El Salvador or, they were born here?
No, they migrated. I'm first generation. I was the one that was born here. So my dad came, I want to say they both came around the same time. My dad's a few years older than my mom, but they both kind of came around the same time and ended up in the Pacoima area in the San Fernando Valley. So,
okay. Yeah,
that's how that whole thing happened. From what I know of is, my mom was friends with one of his younger sisters that they went to school together. So one of my aunts. And they would walk home from school together, and my dad was essentially catcalling my mom, and eventually that's how they started dating, is he just catcalled her.
Like those guys who like what's a catcall? Like the whistle thing?
Yeah, exactly. And I've seen him do that. My dad's a flirt, so I've seen him do that with like, you know, with his current wife and you know, or when we'd be driving somewhere and he'd roll down the window and he'd like whistle at some woman walking by.
Can you do the catcall? Did you ever inherit that from him?
Oh goodness, no. I'm nothing like him that way. I would say that I'm how can I put it? The closest I get to flirting is on stage. You know what I mean? Like that charisma that comes from like flirting. I can only really kind of trigger it as part of my on stage persona. Yeah. Aside from that.
So in real life, you're not like rolling down your window and catcalling.
No,
a group of girls.
No, in fact,
I'm surprised that worked for him. Like, I've never seen that catcall ever be successful for anyone.
Well, it's not going to be successful. I doubt it'd be successful now. I would say that it was definitely of its time kind of thing. Not like that's a good thing, but I'm saying, is it like in that time something like that would happen? And it wasn't quite as not as frowned upon, but it was something that he would do and it'd be 100% fine. So that's how the two of them met. I don't know much more about my history. I'm just now kind of like becoming curious about those who came before me. Like I want to know, because I do this bit on stage where I talk about being part Native American, which is true. But when I asked my grandma what tribe we were from, she was like, my grandma was like, I don't know. Because,
tribe called Quest or what?
Exactly. You should, the Quest tribe.
I just got called a Native American today because I'm all tan and I put my hair in the little man bun because it's long.
Yeah, yeah.
And some guy's like, hey, man, are you Native American? I'm like, hey, dude, I think you're profiling my hair to be Native American. Like I don't know why you would just assume that I'm Native American.
I can see it though. I can see it. You have it. You definitely have it. you kind of have this tan that looks almost very natural. Like, it's not your tan, like, it's your natural skin tone. So I can see that. So there's also a lot of people that are like that. Growing up, I wasn't the most person who was the most aware about, like, different races or anything like that. Like, I didn't know. Right. I remember I was in a Taekwondo class with these Armenian kids, and I'd never heard of Armenians. And that's not to say that I hadn't met them. I just didn't know that they weren't Mexicans. Like, I just assumed that Armenians were, like, people were looked differently based off of their family. Like, if your parents had dark skin, that explains why you have dark skin. If your parents have light-colored right. eyes, that explains why you have light-colored eyes. Not because they all originated from different countries and all of that, but more just because it was more based on your parents. So when I found out that they were Armenian, I was like, oh, you guys don't speak Spanish? Like, no, we're Armenian. I was like, oh, what is that? You know, and they looked a little mad at the fact that I didn't know, but I meant no disrespect. I just legitimately did not know of these different races.
You didn't know what Armenian was? So you basically never been to Glendale?
No, but it's totally possible. But I was such an unaware child that I didn't know the stereotypes or the jokes. You know, I was just...
I didn't know either. Like, when I came, and I didn't know there was different varieties of Chinese.
Yeah.
Like, I had a guy go, like, I'm Burmese. And then another guy was like, I'm Fukunese. And I'm like, I thought there was only Mandarin and Cantonese. And now I realize there's so many different, like, subdivisions of being Chinese. I'm like, holy shit. There's tons of different Chinese, versions.
I mean, yeah, definitely. And it's also like, if you have to think about the amount of countries that are out there. If you're ignorant enough, you'll lump everybody together. There's a podcast that from one of my previous guests. I think you might have met. I'm sure you've met them if you're hanging out in comedy enough. The facial recognition comedy.
Zara.
Yeah, Zara, and then
shout out Zara. That's the homie.
Yeah. So
Zara, and then like the couple. I don't.
Oh goodness, and I feel terrible because I just Oh, I just sent her a message to be
Zara
on the
podcast. And friends. Melissa Shoshani?
No. She does a live show. But that's the joke, is that people would confuse them for one another. And so people would confuse them for one another, and that's how they started this show. But it's like they all kind of come from different backgrounds. Similar. Fizza. Okay, there you go.
Sarah Fatimi.
Yeah, and is that someone? I don't know her.
Okay.
Sorry. Did I lose you? Yeah, I don't see your face right now.
I don't know what happened. Mm. What's going on here? Let me fix that part because... Oh, there was the video. And is that better? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I just can't see you.
Okay. Can you see me yet?
No. Are you on a different app by chance?
No. I don't know why you can't see me. Hold on. Because I have a little... there you are. Is that better? Can you see me?
Much better. Okay. Perfect. Yeah.
So no. I have a little lens, and I think it just kind of got off-centered. Sorry.
It's okay. Okay, so let's get back to what we're talking about. Yeah, so there's different ethnicities. There's different races. I didn't know any of that. When people were being racist towards me, I had no idea that they were being racist. I just thought that they didn't like me because of me. You know, like, yeah. Oh, I'm not a big fan of Jose, so I'm going to give him a hard time and follow him around the store. You know, and it never once occurred to me. There's this woman who
they were just being racist.
Oh, 100%. I was living in Pacoima. And neighbor, like, there was this kid from class that he wanted to hang out, had the same toys, excited, elementary school, by the way. And I didn't have many friends back then, so I was really excited about going over. I took my toys with me. We both had the same Power Ranger. And then when it came time to leave, she was giving him a hard time. She would follow me around the house. She didn't trust me. And she would say things to him, and he would kind of like mutter things that were essentially like, don't embarrass me. He's cool. That's fine. But I didn't understand that. I didn't understand why she didn't like me, because I'd never had a parent or an adult treat me that way. That was my first real interaction. Kids that were dicks to me, and there was a couple of racist kids, but I didn't know, you know, that was a thing.
It's kind of sad that you would think, like, Pacoima, of all places, would be racist.
I mean, it's...
Because it just... Pacoima seems like more of a cultural spot, you know? Like...
Well, you know, once upon a time, Pacoima was predominantly Asian, you know.
And, was it?
Yeah. So it's you know, kind of things have changed over time. But at the same time, it's you're right. While it is predominantly Hispanic now, I mean, we definitely had, neighbors of different backgrounds. We had, you know, black, white, and Asian neighbors. But again, I didn't know the different races or about racism. So I'm walking around. I'm leaving this house. And I'm walking out with my Power Ranger because she's giving me the boot. She's asking me to leave. As I'm walking out, she grabs my arm and twists it so hard and starts yelling at me and says, "I knew it. I knew you were going to steal from me," and started yelling all these things and was going off on me and yelling. And I didn't understand what was happening. She thought I stole her son's Power Ranger toy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So she runs out and then she.
Was she Asian?
No, she was white. So, and then, yeah, so she runs out and, loses her shit on me, yelling at me in front of the neighbors to the point where they all start coming out. And then the son runs out and he's holding his toy because he knows what's happening. And it's sad because we were maybe like 10 years old, maybe a little bit younger. Yeah. And he's like, "No, Mom, this is my toy. He brought his with him. We were just hanging out." And she was so embarrassed and angry at the same time that she just, like, released me. And I wasn't allowed to hang out with him. So I'd be at school, and I'd go up to him, and he'd be like, "Hey, my mom says we can't be friends anymore." And I didn't...
For no fucking reason. You didn't even do anything.
No, not at all. She was embarrassed. And, again, I didn't know that was a racist moment. It wasn't until I was, like, I don't know, washing the dishes as an adult. And then, like, it hit me. I was like, "Oh, shit. That one was fucking racist." Like, that's what that was.
That is pretty racist.
Yeah.
And that, you know, not, aside from racist, pretty shallow to be calling out a little kid, like, to steal a toy and shit. Like, that takes a very shameless person to even go there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That should be a discussion, like, at the dinner table, not pulling your arm and give it back. And then the kid runs out with the Power Ranger. That's fucked.
Yeah. And two things. One, when I went there, I had taken my little biker mice from Mars toy. I don't know how old you are, but if so, but that was a popular show for about a year or so. And,
what was it? The Mars?
Biker mice from Mars. And I
don't remember that. I'm your age, but I don't remember that shit at all.
Okay, so it's about these like mice from another planet that are like literally biker
mice from Mars.
Yes.
Was that like on a like PBS or what? Was that syndicated?
It was. In fact, let me see.
Biker mice from Mars. I don't remember that.
How do I share screen? Hold on a second. No, that's not it.
I guess I was the trendy cartoon guy. I was Transformers, G.I. Joe.
Okay.
You know, fucking Dinomutt.
Okay. Can you see what I'm seeing?
Yeah. Is that it right there?
No, I'm going to go to it right now. So, let me move that out the way. How do I get this?
Biker mice from Mars.
Yeah, so biker mice from Mars. And I believe Ian Ziering was one of the voice actors for
it. Ian Ziering, dude.
Yeah, so.
Steve Sanders was the fucking voice for it.
Yeah, dude. So this is it. Do you see these images?
Oh, all right. Hold on. It's starting to click. I don't remember this, dude. What the fuck?
So this guy right here is who he voiced. And I had this toy as a kid, and so I had it as a kid, and I lost it there. Like, I think she took my toy out of my backpack and put it away because she thought I stole it. So she stole from me when she was accusing me the other way around.
Oh man, that's so bad.
Yeah,
if I were you, I would just call her like now, 20 years later, and ask for it back. Be like, "Hey, I don't know if you remember this, but..."
Oh, I wouldn't know.
And then you fucking, you know.
Well, the kid ended up moving shortly after that, and I can't even remember his name, so I doubt I'd be able to remember hers.
Have you had any contact with this guy? Has he reached out to you on Facebook or Instagram.
No, but at the same time, this was like elementary school, 93, 94. I'm a very different person now, and I don't think we back then. How many of your friends did you know by first and last name? I didn't know many people's last names. I legitimately can't remember his first name. So, but if you're out there, if you're listening and you want to reach out and say that you're sorry and that you will return my toy that was voiced by Ian Ziering, go ahead and reach out to me at I am Jose Chavez and I will forgive you immediately, or just Venmo me. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. The mom should definitely, the mom needs to do a public apology.
Yeah. That would be great, though, if she reached out after all these years. She's like, there was a lot of hate in my heart back
then. I had
then.
This guy hold a grudge on me. It's been... So, when I was in high school, I got... My first year, I got picked on. And then I wanted to be the guy who picked on people the year after I got picked on. Kind of like, it was like a bad... it was like that, you know, when you get abused and then you abuse your kid. It was just like a nasty chain.
I tried that for about 5 minutes, fucking hated it. Proceed.
So my freshman year, I get picked on. This guy sits behind me, just torments me to fucking death. I mean, like any fucked up thing you could do sitting behind someone, he did, like flick the ear, put glue in my shirt. I mean, kick the chair. I mean, everything just bad. And so the next year, I kind of like adopted this like bully habit, and there was this kid named Benji. He was new, he's from out of town, and he sat in front of me, and I started tormenting him, where I would like like hit his neck with a pencil, or just not nice things, things you shouldn't be doing at all to someone just trying to sit and learn, you know. And I just, you know, after, you know, I graduated high school, you know, life goes on, blah, blah, blah. And I would say about like 3 years ago, my drug dealer, my weed dealer was this guy who still hung out with that kid who like I kind of bullied. And so one day he came to drop off weed. And keep in mind, Jose, this is almost 25 years later. Okay. The last time I saw this guy, I'm 37. I saw my freshman year. Oh, no, my sophomore year. So I had to be at least like 17.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been like 20 years.
Yeah.
So my friend comes to drop off weed. I go in the car and there is this guy in the passenger seat. You know when someone's just straight on you?
Yeah.
Like they got their arms crossed. They're just giving you the stink eye. He's like looking out the window. And I get the weed, and I'm trying to introduce my, well, I didn't know it was him. So he gives me my weed, and I look over, and I'm like, hey, what's up, dude? And he does not turn around. What the fuck's wrong with your friend? My friend gets out of the car. He's like, hey, dude, do you remember Benji? Maddox? And I'm like, or whatever, I forgot his last name. I'm like, it's trying to come back to me. He's like, He used to sit in front of you in history. And it was like that movie Memento when he realizes like everything kind of came back to me. And I was like, oh my God, right? And I look over and I'm like, dude, he still held on to it. Like he fucking never forgot, never let go. And it was purposely like trying to be like a dick to me after 20 years. And I really just wanted to like go in for a hug and then just flick his ear and tell him like, get the fuck over it. You know, like grow up. Like it's 20 years later. I'm sorry. Like, but he kept that feeling from me for that long. And I realized, dude, like people just remember the way you made them feel no matter what in life. Like if I was a dick to you, like 10 years later, you're always a dick to me in my mind. It doesn't matter if you went and like solved world hunger. You're still Jose who flicked my ear in seventh grade. And I realized like, fuck, that guy's, he wouldn't let go. He's probably going to die hating me. And it's just sad to know that.
So I'm going to say this right now. You're a dick. Not him, you. I would say... I'm on his side on this one, and let me explain why. So I've been a bully. I've been a bully. I tried to bully someone once, and I felt terrible for doing it.
Yeah, I feel terrible too.
So I understand that you were bullied, and so you were doing it as a defense mechanism. You learned a way to kind of cope. I would say those are probably the formative years. The things that you did probably fucked them up for a long time.
And I did, dude.
So those kinds of things aren't easy to forget. It's not easy to be able to be like, oh, yeah, fucking moving on. Like, he felt that shit, and he probably didn't think about you for a long time. And then when he finally ran into you, it immediately fucking brought it back. So it's not like he's going around constantly being like, fuck George Wang. But, like, as soon as he sees you, he's like, fuck.
I just want to hug him, bro. I mean, all I really did was, like, flick his ear and then, like, do the same. But I kind of just want to, like, apologize, you know? I was trying to be nice when I found out that day, but I guess, like, you know, he's just done. He's over it.
I mean, there's people that I will never – I mean, I'll give you an example. There's a comedian who twice fucked up with me, and I was done with it. I gave him a chance, and then he fucked up again. And this is as an adult. Oh, dude. Okay, so I very early on in comedy – respectfully, I'm not going to use his name because he's matured a lot and has, like, sobered up. He had a problem with alcohol, and it deeply impacted his behavior. So this dude, he goes and I book him on a show. Now, here's the thing. I used to run a show called Comedy Con Carne, and the show was it wasn't necessarily meant to be a Latino show, but it's like I would try to do these backyard comedy shows. And then when I got a chance to run it in a comedy club, I kept the same name because the booker or the comedy club owner wanted to be like, oh, you should have a Latino theme show because they wanted that. It was one of those, like, clubs that wants the disabled comedy night. Yeah, they want nothing but themes. So I book comedians based off of how much I like them as a person and if I think they're funny.
Not off the theme?
No, not at all. So I would book of all ethnicities. I had my buddy Teddy, who's black, my friend Justin, who's Asian, and then my buddy Mitch, who was also white. And so,
what's Teddy's last name?
Tutson.
Black guy, right?
Tutson, yeah.
Yeah, I used to do shit with him.
So he any chance I would get to put them on stage, I'll put them on because they were the three comedians that when I first started doing comedy supported me. Any chance they wanted a spot, I gave it to them. So I do this. I have this comic on, and he's drunk and he's livid at the fact that I have this person. So he wants it's an 8 minute spot. He's like, I'm gonna do 10. I was like, dude, this is a real tight show. I gotta squeeze in these comics. You know, I'm not squeezing. I worked it out a specific way. He goes up there and does almost 20 minutes of comedy and ignores the fuck out of the light. And he does this. And when I take the mic back, he's kind of drunk and he's like, let's see your friends do comedy now. So I give up all of my time.
Did he do good at least?
Oh, he fucking ate it. Like, he was doing well.
Did he bomb?
He was doing great until he wasn't. Oh. You know, because you could at a point you can kind of tell
he overextended his stay.
So he comes up to me and he does this thing that I had a tough time with because he was like, what are you doing booking other people? You got to be about the raza, man. I'm like, it ain't about that. It's comedy. It's a community. It's not picking and choosing, and I'm not going to be a dick like that. So he bounces. I get into it with him, and I give him shit. I didn't pay him. I fucking kicked him out of there. So this happens. And then several months later, he apologizes to me. He's like, hey, man, I'm really sorry about what I did. I was really drunk that night, and I have this anger that I have towards.
Sounds like Jeff Garcia.
No, it wasn't him, but it may as well have been. But he
sounds like a Jeff Garcia story.
No, I don't. I have those, which are similar, but not the same. So I do. So he comes back around, and I'm headlining a show, like a bar show essentially, at the same spot. He's doing one right next door, and he's like, "Well, he's apologizing. I'm like, hey, no worries, forgiven. I'm glad you're taking care of yourself now. Whatever." So, I get paid in drinks. You know how some of those shows go. So I get a drink and a pizza. That's my pay. So I didn't get the pizza because I had to go pay for the pizza. So I get a pizza, I have my drink, and he comes over and he's kind of drunk. And at that point, we're hanging out and the open mic portion starts. So I sign up for the open mic. He signs up for the open mic. We're having a conversation. And then he's kind of like having this angry slur, like a swagger thing going on. And when I go to close out my tab, I come back, my entire pizza's been eaten. What he did he took two bites out of every single slice of pizza and put them back. So
why the fuck would you do that? That's so bad.
I was pissed. And then he finished
That's
my drink.
Unforgivable, bro. So shameless.
I mean, that was his flicking of the year. And I was like, what the
eating
fuck are
your
you doing?
That's way worse than flicking.
Oh no, it's way worse. But I'm saying is that like I was like, what the fuck, man? I was like, dude, you owe me a pizza. He's like, he goes, I don't know his shit. And he started walking out. And then the worst fucking timing, he goes, The host of the open mic goes, all right, coming up on stage now is, and then he announces the guy. So he turns around, like he's walking out the door and leaving. He does this like swivel turn, walks back on stage, and then just proceeds to be super fucking racist on stage, using every racial slur that he could in Spanish about different ethnicities. And in between every single one of them, he'd be like this. He'd be like, you know what? Fuck that black bastard. Hey, shout out to Jose Chavez. And he, you know, blah, 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 yada, yada. I don't like Asians. Hey, shout out to Jose Chavez. He was doing this. And I was like, what the fuck is happening?
Why does he keep saying your name? Don't involve me. What
so,
the fuck?
Because he was drunk and he was mad at me for, you know, because I wasn't racist along with him. So.
And he ate your pizza.
He ate my pizza and he bounced. And I didn't talk to him after that. I definitely talked shit about him to other people. And I tried to talk shit to him. But he would, like, just avoid me from then on. Come several years, 5-7 years later, whatever it is, I see him at this gathering at a park. It's all comics, and we're hanging out, and he's there with his girl. And he kind of gives me this, like, nod, and I give him this, like, angry kind of nod. But the only reason I didn't say anything in that moment is the last person I talked to, they were like, well, he's, like, 5 years sober now because he had a real tough time with alcohol. So he turned shit around, and he's, like, living clean, and he's very much making amends for the things he did wrong. And
and that's good.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where it's like I don't have incentive to forgive him, nor do I want to be associated with him in any way.
But you're just straight.
Yeah,
like it's okay to be straight on someone.
Yeah, so I just said,
it's just sad for me because at least that guy, you have more justification because you're older. And he's eating your pizza and when you're older like that, I get you turned your life around, like, okay, but you're still an adult and you should know better. Like at 30 fucking years old, you shouldn't be eating people's pizzas and saying racial shit and then saying your name. It's just like, it's too much. But yeah. Benji, I was 17. I have a friend. I just fucking approved his friend request that robbed my house when I was fucking, you know, in eighth grade. He broke into my house, stole my mom's credit card, and I accepted him on faith because guess what? I'm like, I get it. You're 16. So you're a fucking asshole. You're a piece of shit. You're hanging out with bad fucking people. And I just kind of wish Benji would have just been enough to been like, you know, like, I wanted to just pull him on the side and be like, hey, dude, I'm sorry for flicking your ear. The year before, the guy who sat behind me flicked the shit out of my ear. And I'm not the flicking guy ear guy. You know, like, I've changed. I'm a great guy. Like, I just, you know, what's sad is a lot of people are good people, but we get put in these fucked up predicaments, whether it's like a shitty friend and you learn this terrible behavior or you're drugs and alcohol, like that guy, that people never get to see the real good side of you. And I'm a comedian, so I'm sensitive and I'm a people pleaser. So for me to take an L on that guy really hurt me because I wanted to see him in my like full spectrum. Like I wanted him to see like I am far from that fucking piece of shit that you saw, you know, in like sophomore year who was trying to be cool, trying to earn his stripes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just kind of bummed me out. Maybe I should write him a letter. I don't know. Maybe I should do a.
Why not? I mean, I was going to recommend that. Now, here's what I'll say. I know George Wang now. I don't know George Wang back then. My impersonation, my perspective of you is you're a good guy. You're hardworking and you help out the youth today. You do things to help other kids out. And I think that if you saw any of the kids being treated the way you treated this kid, you know that you would have a very different perspective of it. You want him?
I would.
Yeah, because you're the person who was the bully in that moment. You want to be able to say, "Come on, man, give me a break," because you yourself don't want to be weighted with that guilt, and I understand that.
Right.
But you also have to be forgiving of him for not being able to get those weights off of him. If you really truly want to do it, you can't force him into forgiving you. I would say that I wouldn't lead with "I'm a good guy," but I would say, you know what?
Yeah, you don't need to tell someone you're good.
Yeah, I would say, you know what? I apologize for the way that I was back then. You could go ahead and explain why, because there's an honest truth there. You were bullied, and you thought that the way to stay away from being bullied was to be a bully yourself. Trust me, I had that thought once, and it didn't. And that's just not true. If it's not in your nature, but at the same time, you have to think, like, this is a kid who felt every day he felt like he couldn't be in this comfortable here because he never knew when the flick was gonna show up. He never knew when the abuse or the torment was gonna come. You know, so it's I would say. Reach out to him.
I wonder if he pierced his ears.
What? After. I don't know.
What if he avoided piercing his ears because, like, he's about to get his ear pierced and he just sees my fucking finger going for his earlobe? And he has, like, PTSD nightmares. He wakes up in a cold sweat.
If you guys end up working it out, definitely don't flick his ear as a joke, because that'll undo everything.
Okay, but my fucked up comedian mind. Okay, this is how fucked up my comedian mind was the punchline would be, "Hey, dude, I'm really sorry. All those years," I hug him and then I flick his ear and be like, "Quit being a little bitch." But you know, that's not who I am. That's not who I am. But my comedian side wanted to go there, but as a joke.
Yeah.
But I realized, like, you know, as a guy who got bullied, and I was not a cool guy ever, I especially when you're in a town, being the only other ethnicity, you become the victim of a fucking bullying. You're right off the bat.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, being not white, you're already a target for all the white kids, because you got the ding dong eyes and you got the fucked up food, you know. You don't ever have food that's normal. It's always some weird thing they've never seen, and you're always getting the weird reactions. So, yeah, I experienced that. And I think my defense mechanism, until I discovered who the fuck I was always trying to do what I thought was, like, going to make me cool or make me a badass. And I realized after all that fucked up experience, what makes you a badass is just being uniquely you. Mm-hmm. It's not trying to copy what someone else did. It's just what makes you unique yourself. And I felt like I didn't discover that until I got into skateboarding. Like, when I started skating, I realized, you know, what skating taught me was, one thing I learned, there's no such thing as race in skating. We looked at things as whack or sick, dope or whack, good or bad, hot or ugly, you know what I mean?
Are these skate terms?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, skate terms. Okay. So it's like, if we skated in a clique, it's not like, "Yo, check out Jose, the Mexican guy. Yeah, he's a good Mexican skater. He's a great Mexican skater." No one even knew what the fuck anyone was. It was like, "Oh no, Jose's sick." Hmm. Have you seen? Oh, did you hear what Jose did last week? He ollied that, like, six thing. That's super sick. We didn't know what race was at all. We never, of course, we had some knucklehead who came in, like, he had all the fucked up jokes. But, you know, prior to that, everyone was just, like, completely innocent. And we just judged things based on, like, whether you were good or you were bad, whether you were dope or you sucked. Mm-hmm. And so the whole question of race wasn't even in our terminology. And it wasn't until I hung out with non-skater friends where I became the Asian guy. "Oh, don't let the Asian guy drive." Bitch, when did we not ever drive good? Like, I didn't even know what that even, like, these weird stereotypes when I went to college that people were, like, saying. Like, I never hung out with, like, things that were so labeled in race and categories all the time.
It's
like, the Mexican guy does this, the black guy does this, the Asian guy does this. I was like, no, we all just skated.
Yeah.
No one had a specific trait because of their stupid ass race. It was just you were skating and it was like a team. You were learning to do shit, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I'm glad I got that, like, I went down that path of learning how to look at people based on their character and not on their stupid ass racial background, that it's made me like more, I'm able to connect to people better. So I don't see the black, I mean, yeah, he's obviously black, but I try to get to know the guy. I don't like, he's the black guy or he's the, and it's weird because if you look at my pattern of like women I've dated, most Asians I know, if I look at their history of women, it's like all Asian. They won't go outside of Asian. It's just like, that's what they know. But because I've been so used to like multiracial people all the time, like my resume of women looks like, you know, the United Colors of Benetton ad. There's just like so many different types of racial, you know, backgrounds because I don't give a fuck. I didn't grow up in that typical Chinese family where you have to marry Chinese. You have to honor. My dad would be like, don't marry Chinese. You need white. They like the tattoo, the skimbo. You know, yeah, man, Chinese, they don't like it. You know, my dad was always like pushing me to like be more like expand my mind and be around all kinds of people, not just, you know, trying to like narrow myself down to like a little racial group, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to put yourself in a racial box.
No, I don't. And I think that sucks because that's just how the way the world is, you know? As a whole, we're very categorized in America.
Agreed.
We're very like Mexican, Chinese, black. And it's other than comedy and skating, I don't really see a world where everyone just doesn't give a fuck. You know, it just really is about being funny or being dope.
You know, one of the things I always think about is, and this is a complaint I bring up all the time, is when you do a show that's predominantly any ethnicity, Asian, Hispanic, you know, whatever it is, the characters always talk about, they always have to self-reference, be like, well, I'm Asian or, well, I'm Hispanic, so here's the following thing, you know, like the way you just did right now, that's how they would write the characters in. You know, they would have a person constantly talk about like, boy, am I glad to be Hispanic today? Or am I glad to be Latin? You know, it's like people write this way and I always have a real tough time with it. And honestly, the interpretations that I'm seeing out there, it's like I love seeing the representation, but I rarely see somebody that fully represents me because they are, it's like a white person went in and wrote for a Hispanic character. That's why I'm a big fan of, I just had on one of the co-creators of the show Hentified, because they wrote these characters in very much in a way where I was like, oh, I totally fucking see my family, my relatives in these characters.
Right.
Yeah. So do you have a, okay, so let's go back a little bit. Let's go back to the whole skating thing. Now, one of the things you and I were talking about recently, you know, this is going to go up tonight, by the way. The audio, the video is going to go up a little later.
Sick. Okay.
So the thing that's going on with COVID is we're not working. We're not doing comedy. So we're not doing the same things we would normally do. And you have found a place in this community, not just skating. I see your guys' videos going around skating. My initial thought is, oh no, they're out in public. I hope they don't get sick. I hope they're wearing masks. Uh-huh. And then, you know, and then my next thoughts are like, oh, he's doing a lot of things. He's doing a lot of tricks. It seems like you are teaching people. I'm trying to remember the other comedian's name. This other Hispanic dude.
Rizzo.
No, not Rizzo. A bigger dude. Jesus, I'm trying to think. He's further down from Whittier. Ryan.
Damaris,
yeah. So he posted this thing. You guys were hanging out, and like he was like, "Have you taught him how to skate?" Or it seemed like you two were skating together. And I don't know how much skating he was doing before then, but it seemed like you were very much encouraging of people to get into it, you know. And
so a lot of my friends who do comedy, well, not a lot, but there's a very few that used to skate. And the weird thing about skating is almost like being in the Skulls. Like, it's a secret fraternity where it's no matter where you go on in life, it's in you. Yeah. Like, just like comedy, like if you quit tomorrow, you know, no matter where you go, anytime you hear something kind of, you'd be like, oh, that could be a good bit, or that guy's funny. Like, you would go back to comedy somehow because it's in your blood. So what happened with skating is I, for a long time, actually was just doing comedy. I wasn't even skating for a while. And I was more into partying. I was really into partying. And then my mom got really sick. And one of my mom's dying wishes when she had cancer was that she just wanted me to stop drinking. I was just out of control, like your friend, like that guy. I was probably like him, but I wasn't eating anyone's pizza. I was just getting drunk all the fucking time. And when my mom said that with her like dying breath, I felt like I owed it to her to be fucking sober until she left this earth. At least you could see that last phase of me trying to not throw my life away on booze.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just decided, like, I'm gonna stop drinking. And now I need to replace that vice with something that I could do. And when I grew up in high school, like, I would just skate it. That was it. Until I hit college, I got a girlfriend, and I thought I was too old for it. I stopped, and then, you know, I did the grown-up thing. I got the corporate job. I fucking went to bars, and I thought, like, yeah, I'm an adult. Which is the fucked up thing about society is they want you to believe, like, yo, that's the way. But really, the way was to just keep fucking skating. Because had I known what I knew now and how I'm making a career off teaching skating, I would have never fucking wasted all my years. Just, I mean, granted, I love the experiences I had, but I could literally do without them, honestly, like knowing what I know now. And so when I got back into skating and I just threw myself head into it and I was like, okay, I'm not going to drink. I'm going to get back into skating. And I fell in love with it. And it reminded me of who I was before I did anything else. And then I just started skating every day because I was like, not only is it fun, it's exercise. And I think what happened was at this age in my mid-30s, for me to resonate that passion and like go all in with skating, what that did was it did something to the people who like follow me or my friends, because all those guys were like me. Like Ryan is a great guy, but he loves to drink. He loves to party. But I know at the end of the day, like he feels fucking hollow without the drinks. And so when I started to skate, he would, you know, casually hit me up. Hey, let's meet up. But he would always just like get too fucked up and never make it to our meetup. And finally, I think one day he just was like, hey, I want to like not drink. And I'm really going to meet you up. And then he started coming out. And then when he started coming out, it's like, you know, it's like a domino effect, right? All these other guys just kind of pop up like whack-a-moles, like, oh shit, you're skating again. So then it becomes this like chain reaction where your energy, you're creating the synergy. It's like, let's say you quit comedy, Martin Rizzo quit comedy, and I quit comedy. And we're all just doing nothing for like a year. We're just fucking, you know, doing nothing. And then we see Jose slowly get up and start doing mics again. And then you start posting shows, and they start posting clips, and then you start doing podcasts. And then we're like, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we need to start doing comedy. So I feel like that's what's happening right now. So like whatever these guys are doing, it's because it's in there. It's just been distracted by so much bullshit. And that's what life does, is it likes to take your passion that maybe something you're really good at. And it likes to just cover that shit up with a bunch of bullshit to the point where you just ignore shit you love and you want to go like work for someone. You want to go hang out with your girlfriend She tells you not to do comedy because she hates it. So you don't do comedy, right?
Well, it's that clutter. It's that clutter that happens in life.
It's the clutter.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the clutter. And what I love about skating, what I love about comedy is that's who the fuck I am. And for me to sit here and tell everyone in the world that, like, I am literally making my career off of those two things is the proudest thing I could ever say wholeheartedly, you know, because my whole life I have been misled into thinking that I need to work these stupid jobs, or I've been promised, you know, all this fucking money to work for like some guy and then build his dream, to find out after he builds his dream, he just dumps everyone else to live out his dream. And I'm like, what am I doing? Yeah. So I realized, like, you know, about 2 years ago, I got really, really sick. It's the whole, you know, movie scenario where I get sick, I lose my job, I lose everything. And I literally am stripped bare naked. I don't know where rent's coming in. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do, dude. And I had no choice but to just do fucking comedy, pick up those little $40 spots to pay my rent. And the minute I started to wholeheartedly throw myself into the direction of my dreams, I felt like that's when life just started to kind of 180 for me.
That's good, dude.
So I just, and then I got into skating. Rizzo got me a job as an after-school program club leader that would run skateboarding for high school students and middle school students.
I remember when he was doing that, and I was very impressed by that. I was like, that's awesome that you could take your skills and knowledge and pass that knowledge on.
Shout out to Rizzo, because without that little guy, man, I would miss out on a lot of serious opportunities. Like, Rizzo has always been the one to kind of reel me back into where I should be. I'd be out there, you know, and Rizzo would be like, you should do this, or, you know, you should do that. And the minute I got that job as that leader, I found my calling.
Yeah.
But the problem was, I worked for a school, and the school is kind of like the Antichrist of skateboarding, because I grew up at a school that was trying to ban skating. So here I'm at the school teaching these kids something I love. And then you got this corporate fucking asshole with one of those clipboards and like a hard hat. And he's there like watching my class and marking me down on my teaching. Well, bitch, I really wanted to just be like, you go do an, like, why don't you do a trick? Let me see if you can even skateboard, dude. It's just corporate people that don't know anything. And I decided to like fucking quit and start my own. I'm like, you know what? I could do this on my own, start my own skate school, get my own clients. And that's exactly what I did. And right now, like, I'm not gonna lie, I am making more money. I am doing the best I've ever had in any job with just teaching kids on my own terms, on my own fucking, no boss, I'm my own boss. I wake up every day like fulfilled, because at the end of the day, dude, I go to bed knowing, and I just think of those kids' smiles of that, like, you know, that like, oh my God, I did it. You know, I get to take that energy from kids, that positive, fun, untapped into, not jaded energy. And it just gives me so much life.
I saw that. You posted a story the other day about this, like the collection of this girl doing a trick and get this, and she, it was like in front of her mom, and she was so excited for her mom to see her doing this.
Oh yeah,
move.
The mom fucking found me on TikTok. They drove 2 hours, bro, 2 fucking hours in traffic for this 1 hour session in the middle of a parking lot in downtown LA. You know how, for a mom who's probably this like professional real estate woman, to be that down, to be like, we're gonna go in this ghetto ass plaza like in the middle of nowhere because I want to see my daughter learn and she's in the car. It's just, now, it's so awesome.
Had the kid done any of those moves before, or is that something you taught her?
No, I taught her. Like, they had like, it's kind of like you're trying to get a joke to work, but the punchline isn't there, and then you give them that tag that just fucking takes it over the top. Now they're killing everywhere. That's what I do. I'm giving them that tag that works. They got the they got the fucking premise down, but for some reason that punchline isn't hitting. So I go in there and I give them that, like, that fucking delivery that they need. And, you know, so far it's been working. And you know, I feel good because I don't feel like a con artist. I feel like I'm doing my job. I'm doing what I should be doing. And it's weird because skating has been the one thing I've done for over 25 years and never thought a fucking thing about money. I never, like in comedy, I always thought like, I want to do comedy. I love it. But yeah, I want a special. I want to get famous. I want to make lots of money. I never thought about that with skating. I never thought like, I'm going to do this skating thing and I'm going to get rich. I'm going to make, it never even occurred that way. Everything that happened with the lessons kind of organically fell into place. One thing led to another. All my clients come from referrals. I don't have cheesy infomercials out there. I'm not buying sponsored ads on Instagram. It's just word of mouth. And now I've been able to create this like huge clientele of just kids who want to learn. And then I started putting the videos on TikTok. The TikToks all went like, you know, the TikToks got all the a bunch of views. And what I'm realizing is all these kids that are like asking me for lessons is that there's so many kids out there that want to learn and they're scared because they've never done it and they don't have anyone to kind of like guide them. And none of their dads are like cool dads, like who skate or do shit. So they don't know what to do. And I'm kind of like that big brother that's like, you can do it, man. Come on. Like, I'm going to put you in there. And it feels good, man. It feels like I found my calling.
That's good, dude. I'm happy to hear that. Hey, I apologize. We're going to have to wrap this up. First of all, the things that you're doing out there that you're doing with these kids right now, that the things that you're doing, especially right now in COVID, it's, you know, you're finding your out, not just an outlet to like keep your mind clear and to like deal with life, but you're finding a way to be lucrative with it and teaching kids this thing that they really truly want to learn. I mean, I think that if I had an instructor, maybe I would be more into it right now, but I'll be honest, skating was never really for me, but the thought of teaching somebody something like that, it's always the first step in getting the ball rolling for developing your personality, your persona at that age, you know, so that's a good developmental age. So let's plug your social media. Let's plug your thing. So you can, if anybody's listening and they want to reach out, how can they reach out to you?
Oh, so you can reach out to me on my Instagram. It's George Wang Jr. My TikTok, same thing. George Wang Jr. JR. And, yeah, it's the same for TikTok and Instagram. And yeah, those are the two places. Honestly, if you want to get a hold of me, you could DM me.
And it's not just for kids, right? You'll teach anybody.
Yeah, my client tomorrow's in her 30s.
Okay.
And she's just looking to pick up something during the lockdown that she doesn't want to go to the gym. She'd rather skate and have fun. And I'm like, let's do it, you know?
Yeah.
What's the difference? So yeah, I go from anywhere. I go from as young as 3 years old. So all the way to like 40, I've gone a 47 year old, bro.
That's impressive. I mean, for anybody in their 40s, that's not going to be me. 40 me, it's going to be, I might learn, you know what I'll do in my 40s. I'll learn how to use a unicycle. That'll be my thing.
Yeah, there we go. Find a unicycle coach.
Oh, if they exist, if there's a George Wang of unicycle learning, I'm going to go to him.
There's a guy for every, there's a fucking cup holder coach out there. There's a guy who has a niche for everything.
I hope you reach out to the guy. I hope, you know, if nothing comes from it, make your peace with it. You know, just be like, well, there's just one guy out there that just won't like me. And I'm pretty sure there's got people out there that don't like me right now, you know, and I'm the adult, you know, so, but it's fine, dude. It is what it is. Sometimes there's some people you just can't reach. And sometimes there's enough bad blood there where it's like, you got to move on. But
yeah, this was about 3 years ago. So I'm sure maybe he's probably better now. I don't know. Who knows? Benji, if you're out there, I'm sorry, dude.
Yeah. I was going to say, should I bleep out his name? Nah, that's editing.
He's not, he won't even click on a fucking podcast with my name on it. Even,
That's true. Unless he's like sitting there and he's like sharpening a knife, being like, today's the day. And then he listens
or
to this
you,
one.
Or
he,
you put in the description, this guy George flicked Benji's ear. And he
I'm going to find him and then I'm going to send him this episode. No, that's it. No, but I do got to wrap
please.
It up.
Please, right. Benji, let's wrap it up with this. I'm sorry I flicked your ear, okay? I got my ears flicked. It was a bad like cycle of bad behavior. It's not who I am. I will kiss your ear. If I see you, I will suck on your earlobe, bro.
Now,
like, just to like tell you, I'm that sorry.
Now, I'll also give you this bit of advice. When you apologize, don't emphasize that much of the ear flicking because it sounds like you're being a dick about it.
Like you're being a joke. You're joking with
me. Yeah, but
I'm just gonna be like, I'm sorry, I was a dick.
Yeah, that's
why
it.
Am I saying about the ear?
Legitimately, it's like, what more can you say? You know, it's that's just how things go sometimes, man. But
can you hear me, dude?
Right now.
No. I was going to say, can you ear me to him?
Oh. God damn it. All right, buddy. Take it easy. We'll talk soon, and I can't wait to get back to the scene with you.
Yeah, man. By the way, before we dip, do you have anything coming up? Or, like, how's the non-stand-up for you? How long has it been?
I haven't performed since late February. I want to say I did a show early March, but I'm pretty sure it's just late February. I don't miss it. I mean, I do and I don't. I get a little bit of FOMO when I see people getting up on stage. I have the dreams every now and then. But honestly, I've always been a guy who says I got to live more as much life outside of comedy as possible. Otherwise, I'll never have a good perspective in comedy. You know, eventually it becomes a snake eating its own tail. And so I like the time right now. It's given me a lot to work on. I'm gonna do no COVID comedy, no COVID related jokes, because once we go back, that's all anyone's gonna talk about. So
I think you're right about that.
Yeah. So
don't do the COVID related jokes.
No, that's good advice to give comedians if you run into them. But yeah. Take it easy, dude, and we'll talk soon.
Okay.
All right.
Hell yeah! Thanks for having me on, dude.
For sure, man. Take it easy.
Later, brother.
Later.
Peace.
All right, so thank you very much for listening to that. And would you look at that? For some reason, that didn't end up working. That's life. It didn't end up recording the video, but at least we got the audio in. So we're good for that. But thank you so very much if you were listening. You know, we try to do our best to be good people, and obviously, we weren't always the way we are now. And I'd say just continue to try to give people a chance, even if you're not a big fan of them in this moment. You know, there's always a chance for redemption. Take care. Keep life awkward. Awkwardlysocialcomedy.com. Don't forget to follow me at @IamJoseChavez. And if you need to reach out to me for anything, go ahead and email me, JoseChavezComedian.com. And I do have a phone number, a voicemail line. If you want to call in and leave a comment, it goes straight to me, and it's specifically for podcasting. That phone number is the following, 818-697-0050. Again, that phone number is 818-697-0050. All right, y'all, take care. Bye.